the Clement Chambers Benenson Professor of American Colonial History at Tulane University. She's coming to Lafayette on Tuesday, April 9th. She'll be here at 6:30 at the UL Alumni Center for a lecture and book signing. Professor Clark will be speaking about her new book entitled The Strange History of the American Quadroon, Free Women of Color in the Revolutionary Atlantic World. And Emily, there are 100 questions I'm sure people have for you just from the title of that book.
Right.
And, I mean, several elements of that, of course, have been the subject of numerous romance novels.
Yes, they have. And there's actually more, you know, there's a line in A Christmas Carol by Dickens that says there's more of gravy than the grave about you when he encounters a ghost.
Right.
And there's really more fiction than there is fact. About the New Orleans Quadroon.
Mm-hmm.
She really is more a figment of white male imagination and desire than she is a reflection of what free women of color in New Orleans were really like in the late colonial and antebellum period. And so she made great fodder, this imaginary figure, for lots of really wild and lurid romantic novels, and also anti-slavery novels in the 19th century. But those really were very close to, they were more fictional than they were real. But it's a really tough thing to sort of rearrange people's heads and get them away from that mythic figure and redirect their gaze toward the women who actually lived here.
And, you know, I think in part are all those lurid book covers. I have grand memories, you know, my parents' bookshelves of seeing Book of the Month Club, you know, a Frank Yerby book, or and always had these, the quadroons on the cover.
Absolutely.
And promised, you know, rather scandalous stories inside. And I think we have those images in our head as well as just the topic. How did you get interested in this topic?
It was to solve a mystery. Mm. You know, historians love reading mysteries,
mm-hmm.
But we even better like solving them. And so there was a mystery that presented itself to me. There was, on the one hand, all these novels
mm-hmm.
that you talked about, all these pictures of quadroon women with their bodices being ripped off. And then on the other hand, there were the free women of color that I encountered in the archives of colonial and 19th century New Orleans. And the two things didn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
The women that arise from the pages of the archives, and there are hundreds of these women who arise from the pages of the archives, were married for the most part by the time we get to the 19th century. They were very pious. They were wives and mothers. Often their marriages were such serious and notable affairs that there were marriage contracts involved. And their daughters got married, and they would attend their daughters' weddings. And so, on the one hand, I kept learning about all these black wives and mothers of New Orleans. And I couldn't figure out where this other figure came from. And I also couldn't figure out, or I wanted to at least grapple with the question of why this other image has been so intractable when the reality, it appears from the archives anyway, was actually very different. So it was a mystery that I wanted to solve, and it drew me in. It drew me deeper into the archives, and it also forced me to read all of those horrible books that have been written.
You must have quite
over
a
collection.
I'm sure you have quite a collection of them.
I do. I do. Well, actually, I've tried not to keep any of them on my bookshelves. I sort of check them out of libraries and roll my eyes and then return them.
Well, now you're a professor of American colonial history, so obviously this is an issue. And you mentioned by the time they got into the 19th century, so a lot of this history is actually taking place in the 1700s that you've been researching.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. And back in the 1700s is when things really began to change in terms of the experience of free women of color. First of all, there were not that many of them early in the 1700s. It's only in the last third of the 18th century that their numbers really rise. And they begin to get married in the last quarter or so of the 18th century. And it is, to some degree, a product of the development and emergence of the Free Black Militia, So it has to do with the men, actually, free black men, who really want to stake a claim on the respectability and the status that comes with being a soldier and a husband. And so we see free black militiamen turning out in groups at weddings of their fellow militiamen. And it really is kind of a trend. So they're the ones that get it rolling during the colonial period. And then by the time we get to the 19th century, it's really taken root among the free black population of New Orleans and has become really the expected norm for free women of color is to get married.
Maybe you should write a whole line of romance novels having to do with the free militia and their marriages. Sort of counteract the romances with the quadroons. I think that's the problem. They just haven't been fictionalized.
Well, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. I'm not so sure I'd be as good at writing fiction as I am a historian, but there certainly are lots of stories there. Can I tell you one?
Yes, absolutely.
This is absolutely one of my favorites. The captain of the Free Black Militia was a truly extraordinary man named Noel Carrier. He was born to an African father. His African father had two wives. Noel's mother was his first wife, and there was a second wife. And so he kept both of these wives going at the same time. But Noel, when he achieved his freedom and joined the militia, really stepped away from that African tradition of multiple wives and embraced the European tradition of having a single wife and getting married in church. And so he got married very, very young to a free woman of color. And then a few years later, his father and mother show up at St. Louis Cathedral getting married. And so what I've imagined is that the son tells the father, it is time for you to marry my mother and legitimate me, right? Because legitimacy was important in the colonial period, and Noel Carrier wanted to be the legitimate child of his father and mother.
So I
picture this, you know, ancient, not so ancient, but in his 60s father saying, okay, whatever you want, son, I'm on my way.
What a great story. I really think you ought to look around for a novelist who would be willing to take up this cause. I think they could make some great stories and really good.
There are wonderful stories.
Good book covers. I want to tell people who are just tuning in that my guest by telephone from New Orleans is Professor Emily Clark. She is the Clement Chambers Benenson Professor of American Colonial History and Associate Professor of History at Tulane University. She'll be in Lafayette Tuesday evening, April 9th at 6:30 at the UL Alumni Center for a lecture and book signing, talking about what you've been listening to her talk about is her new book, The Strange History of the American Quadroon, Free Women of Color in the Revolutionary Atlantic World. Well, where do the grains of truth come from regarding the quadroons?
There are grains of truth, and they're very sad and tragic ones. In 1809, there was an influx of almost 10,000 refugees of the Haitian Revolution to New Orleans. There were among them over 3,000 free women and children, primarily of color. So the free people of color who came as part of that refugee influx were the most vulnerable kind of population that we find in refugee influxes, women and children. And we know it's kind of a duh moment for a historian. As I looked at, tracked these women and what happened to them when they came to New Orleans, well, what happened to them was what happens often to women who are refugees, and that is they find themselves in difficult financial situations, and they are more likely than other women to find themselves standing with an infant at the baptismal font with no man claiming paternity. So they show up in the sacramental records in New Orleans, which are the records that I use a lot, disproportionately as what we would call today single mothers. And it makes a lot of sense when you think about it, because they arrived with nearly nothing except themselves. Mm. So many of these women, I know, were what we call single mothers, but I also speculate that they may have been drawn into the sex industry, to be blunt about it. New Orleans in 1809, when this refugee influx arrived, was full of single men, most of them English-speaking men from the northern parts of the United States who had come to New Orleans to take advantage of its economic boom. And so there was a huge market, frankly, for the services, the companionship, to be euphemistic about it, of these refugee women. Mm-hmm. And so the grain of truth is that there was a population of free women of color in New Orleans who very likely found catering to the fantasies and to the sexual appetites of white men a way to survive for a period of time. And most of the earliest accounts that we have of New Orleans free women of color come from that period of time. Mm-hmm. And then they get repeated over and over again. Mm-hmm. So what I speculate is that this is the grain of truth, that the early accounts are made during a time when the refugee women and their neediness is at its height. And then everybody who comes after just keeps repeating the same stories over and over again. You know, there really was no such thing as plagiarism in the 19th century. People just shamelessly copied what mm-hmm. other people had said. And so when I started looking at accounts of New Orleans free women of color, what I found was that it was sort of like a broken record. And that's because people were just copying one another through the decades.
Well, and the accounts of the reporters and
exactly.
fiction writers who came to New Orleans really tended to gravitate towards the most exotic stories they could find.
They did. Mm-hmm. And then something else happened that's really important, and that is once the reputation of the city was established in this moment of tragedy, really, it then began to position itself to respond to the market that had been created by that. So there had been no sex industry to speak of. I mean, there's always a sex industry in a port city, but not an elaborate one. But once the reputation of New Orleans was established as a place where you could come and see beautiful, exotic, free women of color who were willing for a small fee to entertain white men, then there's an industry that develops in response to that. And so by the 1840s and 50s, quadroon balls are commercial affairs. They're on the tourist itinerary. They're in tour guides. When a carriage picks you up at the Opera House, they volunteer to take you to one of these gatherings. So it becomes an established industry in response to this mythology that's been built up. And the really weird thing, Judith, is that some of the women, especially in the 1840s and 50s, who are at the ballrooms are not even from New Orleans. They're coming from St. Louis and Philadelphia and New York.
Sounds like a familiar story.
Yes, it is. It is a familiar story.
But as you say, this group was really a very small sliver of the whole population of the free people of color in New Orleans.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But it became a myth and obviously an enduring myth. Right now I'm speaking by telephone from New Orleans with Professor Emily Clark. She's talking about her new book, The Strange History of the American Quadroon, Free Women of Color in the Revolutionary Atlantic World. She will be in Lafayette Tuesday evening, that's April 9th at 6:30 at the UL Alumni Center. She'll be giving a lecture about her book and signing copies of the book as well. So if you're interested in the subject and would like a different take than perhaps some of those lurid romances you saw on your parents' shelves, learn a bit about history and the true culture of New Orleans. Great opportunity for us all here. This is a part of the lecture series that the history department here at UL Lafayette strives to bring to us throughout the year, bringing in historians who have recently published books, and we're so glad that you'll be coming tomorrow evening. Do you have a website, Emily, or is there a place where people can go to find out more about the book?
I do. Well, the best place for people to go and find out more about the book is at the University of North Carolina Press website, and they can just go to that homepage and put in Emily Clark, and the book will pop up. and there's quite a bit about the book there. And then I also have a homepage. If you just Google the Tulane History Department and click on People, you will see a link to me, and it tells more about me and all the different kinds of work that I do, not just on quadroons, but other aspects of American history, too.
All right. Again, Emily Clark will be in Lafayette Tuesday evening. That will be at 6:30 at the Alumni House. It's free and open to everyone, anyone interested in the subject. And, of course, they have been celebrating Women's History Month, which just recently ended. And I guess we can tag this along with that as well. They've been celebrating and having quite a number of people come to talk about women's issues and women's history. Well, Emily, thank you for taking a moment to speak with us by telephone from New Orleans. And we look forward to having you here in Lafayette and get to talk to you more about your research.
Thank you, Judith. It was my great pleasure.